across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you very much for keeping the faith with the online show and for your support to my worldwide family of listeners for my new talk radio show in the UK. It's on Talk Radio, the website talkradio.co.uk, 10 p.m. UK time Sunday nights. And I need, certainly in the early phases of this show, to have you involved in this. If you want to call the show, send it an email, tweet it, or come on the show, would love you to be part of this because you've been with me for 10 years online. And my promise to you is that this online show will continue and develop, but will be accompanied by this new radio show. Now, some of you have emailed to say that the radio show is not quite like what we're doing here online, and there are reasons for that. You know, I've worked at about 22 or 25 different radio stations across a whole life on radio. And when you go into somewhere new, there's a whole new dynamic to get used to. New systems, studios, everything. And of course, going into somebody else's radio station to do a thing, at the beginning, it's not going to be the same. You have to make it work for you. So that is still a work in progress, but I would welcome your thoughts about all of that and suggestions for it. You can email me through my website here, theunexplained.tv, and a lot of you have done that. I'm going to do some shout-outs ahead of Ray Hernandez, a very special guest, one of the four co-founders of Free, which was founded by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the recently deceased, of course, Apollo astronaut, a man who was on this show. Fascinating and interesting, gracious man he was. Free is the foundation for research into extraterrestrial encounters. They've done some remarkable new research. And Ray Hernandez, one of the main people from that organization, is going to be here in just a moment from the US. Let's do some shout-outs. Not nearly enough of them as I'd like to do. So if you have emailed and I don't mention you, thank you very much for your email. And please, as Margaret said to me in a recent email, she knows that even if I don't get back to her, I've seen the email. And Margaret, you're absolutely right. Tracy sends me a story about shadow people, started for her when she was about 22 and stopped after she told the shadow person to stop visiting. The reason I'm telling you Tracy's story is I've had so many emails in the last 2-3 weeks about shadow people since we did a show about it. I really was not a big fan of shadow people or as a story or a phenomenon until you started sending me emails, and they don't stop. Howard Goodall says, I want to drop you a quick note about how much I appreciate your talk radio show on Sundays and the podcast. I listen to both. Howard, thank you very much for your nice words. Brian in Ireland, thanks for the email, says, listen to your talk radio show, thought it was excellent, different from the Unexplained Online. Okay, well, I take that point. Brian says, can I make the podcast longer? We're working on all of that, Brian. Keep coming back to the website for more information, as they say. Martina says, have you heard of the black goo sentient oil, which is allegedly behind the Falklands War? I'm going to check that out. I have heard something about that distantly in my memory, but I'll look into it, Martina. Dave and the family in Milwaukee, USA, says, please, Howard, don't try and be Art Bell. Be Howard Hughes. You're great as you are. Thank you, Dave and family. Vicky in Ottawa, great suggestion about organ donations and people taking on the characteristics of the donor. I've got an email out about that, and let's see if we can get an expert on here. Joey says, congratulations on the radio show, the UK's version of Coast to Coast, we hope so. So, also, Joe Febo, thank you for your email. Tino, thank you for your email and suggestion, which I'm working on. Glenn in Dublin, thanks for yours. Carmen Brown, thank you. Jeff in St. Louis. Amber in Australia. Amber, would you like to come on my show? I think you're in Melbourne, aren't you? On the radio show and talk about your shadow person experience. Very interested in that. If you can do it, I'd love to hear from you. Email me, tell me, and we'll call you. Russell Burridge, thanks for the email. And Jeff in Columbus, Ohio. A thoughtful and interesting email. That is by no means all of the emails that I've had, but as many this time as I can fit in, and I do hope you understand. Please go to my website if you want to connect with me, theunexplained.tv, or vitally, if you'd like to give me a donation to this show to help the work to continue. Ray Hernandez in the United States, going to talk with him right now, the guest on this edition of The Unexplained, one of the founders of Free, researching properly and scientifically extraterrestrial contact and the various phenomena around ET. Let's get to Ray Hernandez in the US. Ray, thank you very much for coming on The Unexplained.
Thank you very much, Howard.
I've only ever passed through Miami twice, Ray, but I remember heat and humidity mixed with the friendly people create a heady cocktail, I found.
Well, it encourages me to drink beer occasionally on those warm days, especially when I'm out in the yard doing some gardening work. I always have a six pack of beer ready for me.
Oh, you got it. Nice and chilled. Oh, boy. Nice and chilled. Oh, wow. Now, we have work to do, so no beer for the next hour, because there's a lot to talk about.
I don't want to misguide you here, Howard. This is rarely I go to my backyard and work on my backyard. So.
Well, I'm glad we've got that clear before we start, Ray. Lovely to talk with you. It's been a process that's taken some months to get the free organization on, and I guess the hiatus, the delay in all of that was the very sad death of a man I interviewed on this show 5 years ago, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the man who's behind the whole organization. What a great loss.
Oh, yes. People really don't understand what a genius Edgar was. He was really the modern Leonardo da Vinci. Can I speak a little bit about Edgar? Because I think it's very important for people to know just how important Edgar's legacy is to humanity.
I would like you to, because I think he was often misquoted.
Oh, all the time. Very much misquoted. And we can get into some of that as well. But basically, Edgar is most commonly known to humanity at large as the sixth man on the moon. And the folks in the UFO or the paranormal arena know him as really the pioneer in the modern ufology disclosure movement. But Edgar was much, much more than that. A lot of people don't know that he actually founded this research institute in California called the Institute for Noetic Sciences. And that is an institute which is focusing both on the science of telepathy, of ESP, as well as the research into energy healing, research into all aspects of the paranormal, the remote viewing, out-of-body experiences. But one thing that that organization never did go near is the topic of UFO-related contact experiences, because it's such a taboo topic.
Well, it is, but there are those who say that some of the Apollo astronauts knew more about all of that than they were allowed to tell.
Yes, correct. Edgar himself has told me that many of the cosmonauts have had paranormal experiences in space. Also, many of our astronauts have also had paranormal experiences in space. But Edgar was such a, to certain things, they were very, very private to him. So he never divulged the details of it.
Did you get the impression, from Edgar that he, as some people tend to say, and they may be wrong, that the Apollo astronauts were all individually warned off talking about precisely what they experienced there?
I think, yes, correct. There were certain lines that you don't cross. He had respect. All these men that were in the Apollo program, these were not only colleagues, these were friends of his. And also he knew their children after these individuals, many of them had passed away. He had relationships with them. And he just didn't want to give them a hard time by going out publicly with some of this information. So so Edgar was a very private man in that way and very respectful in that way. But he has publicly has spoken, and I have recorded him in several interviews where he acknowledges that, yes, ET contact does exist. It's full-fledged that UFOs do exist. It's being covered up by government. And so that is a very important aspect of Edgar's life.
Well, a massive aspect. I wonder if he ever, and I'm sorry for pushing you on something that's in the news at the moment, but has been a lot in recent years. Now, we both know that Edgar was very connected right up until the end. His work never stopped. I wonder if he had any views on the regular reporting of things appearing near the International Space Station that were anomalous. The only reason I'm raising this is that I talked about this on my radio show a week or so ago, and also there are more and more reports in the newspapers, certainly the last few years, about anomalous things, objects appearing near, for example, the ISS.
Well, Edgar was aware of that, but I believe that over the years he lost a lot of his contact, because as the more he went out publicly, the less he maintained a lot of contact from the people that were still in the space program now.
So was he ostracized?
Most definitely.
That's a bit of a revelation, because, you know, I thought the family was the family.
Yeah, the family is the family, unless you're Edgar. But Edgar did have a lot of close friends that he did keep in contact over many, many years. And at his, it wasn't really a funeral, more of a ceremony celebrating his life that took place several weeks after he passed away. There were several astronauts that were there and several children of the astronauts. Not as many as I think should have appeared, no way near, but there were a few there. And so Edgar did maintain close relationships throughout the years with many of these astronauts and family members.
Did he leave you in his, and I know that he was ill at the end, but still had a very bright and spry mind. Did he leave you with any messages or thoughts, anything important for the world?
Well, what we talked about, I went and visited him about 2 weeks before he passed away. He was in the hospital, and he was not that communicative. I had earlier called Dr. Rudy Shields, who is the executive director of our organization, which is FREE, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. And Rudy is a 75-year-old emeritus professor of astrophysics at Harvard University. And he had been a close colleague with Edgar for many, many years. They had been working on the physics of the quantum hologram theory of consciousness, and which is very, very dear to Edgar. So Rudy himself had been hospitalized over the last two previous months, because he had several brain operations, to tell you quite frankly. He had fallen down and they had to drill holes to relieve pressure in his head. Gee. And so he was feeling, you know, reasonably well. Mm-hmm. So I said, Rudy, I'm on my way to see Edgar. If Edgar's up to it, would you want to talk to him and possibly say your goodbyes to him? And so I was in the middle of these two literal geniuses talking to each other and basically saying goodbye to each other. And what they talked about very, very briefly was that Edgar validated the work that Rudy was working on in terms of new explanations of black holes, and also continuing with the work of the quantum hologram theory of physics and consciousness that they were both working on. And Edgar was basically, you know, very supportive, told Rudy that he's very, very supportive and to keep on pushing it. You know, pushing the envelope. And then after we hung up with Rudy, then Edgar and I had a very brief conversation about near-death experiences. And Edgar, that's another aspect that people don't know about Edgar. He was one of the co-founders of this organization called Eternia. And their focus is on near-death experiences. So Edgar was pushing the envelope in so many different arenas in terms of the quantum physics of what is the nature of our reality with, you know, these genius physicists, and Rudy's up there. A lot of people don't know about Rudy, Dr. Rudy Shields, is that he had an intellectual battle for over 25 years with Sir Stephen Hawking as to what is the true nature of black holes. And that's how Hawking became famous, through his work on black holes. And 3 years ago, or 2.5 years ago, I should say, Hawking came out publicly and said that he had been wrong for 30 years as to the true nature of black holes. And Rudy's version turned out to be correct.
And it's not often that you get Stephen Hawking to retract.
Correct. but just to let you know, just, you know, who Rudy Shields is. This guy's a genius among geniuses. And Edgar is working very closely with him. As a matter of fact, I was introduced to Edgar through Rudy. Rudy had told me, write down this telephone number, and I wrote it down. And he says, this is the telephone number of my mentor. So this is the mentor of Dr. Rudy Shields, who bested Stephen Hawking. So I asked him, I said, who's your mentor? And he goes, Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Wow.
Okay. So that's just a little bit background about Edgar. Just a little bit.
Just one final thing. One final thing about this remarkable man. And he was a remarkable man. When we did our interview 5 years ago, he sent me high-definition video. And he was it was his study. He was in his study. And it was festooned with books. And the resolution of the video was so good that I could read the title on those books. What a man of intellect and learning and foresight. At the very end, you talked about near-death experiences. Did he give you any indication that because his life had harmonized science and the psychic in that way, and he'd been lucky enough to walk on the moon, had he had anything approaching a near-death experience as the end came? You said that he was in and out of lucidity at the end.
Correct. I was not there for the last 2 weeks, so I cannot account for that. But what I told Edgar was to remind him that we are eternal spiritual beings, because I had my own NDE event, and then I also repeated what happened to my father. My father had a very extensive near-death experience event, and so Edgar was nodding his head, said, "Yes, Ray, I know very well. And plus he had been a very close friend of Dr. Eben Alexander, who for 15 years was a surgeon, a professor of neuroscience at the Harvard Medical School. And he wrote a book that was number one on the New York Times bestseller list, titled Proof of Heaven.
He was somebody I always wanted to interview and didn't get the chance.
Oh, no, he's still around.
Is he really? Okay, well, good. Maybe I'll try, if you can put me in touch with him.
Sure, I can send you his email.
That's very, very good news. I'd be very keen to speak with him.
Yes. No, he's very smart, very articulate, and he's really informing humanity that NDEs are very, very real.
And you had your own?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And that tallied with your father's experience?
It was right before, my father had his experience 15 years before, but it wasn't until I told him about what had happened to me, then he came out open and told me about his experience. And so Edgar was on top of this. Mm. He also, just to sidetrack a little bit, he also founded this organization called Quantrac. And Quantrac's mission was to get many of the world's leading alternative, quote-unquote, physicists to work on the alternative nature of our reality. And all of them were adherents to the quantum hologram theory of physics. And these were very well-known people all throughout the world. So Edgar was involved in so many different projects, and he actually started and coordinated all of these different projects, including the one that Free is involved with. Free has four co-founders. Edgar, obviously, Dr. Rudy Shields, who I stated before, is this 75-year-old emeritus professor of astrophysics at Harvard, and Mary Rodwell, who is a researcher who has worked for over 30 years on experiencers of UFO-related contact experiences, and myself.
All of them, including yourself, accomplished people in your own way. Your biography, if I read it properly, said that you're an IRS tax expert. Is that right?
I am an IRS estate tax attorney. I handle only estate taxes, which is an inheritance tax. And so that's my livelihood. Before then, I was an adjunct professor at the New School for Social Research and at the City University of New York. And previous to that, I was, during all this time period, I was an adjunct professor. I was a mid-level manager for the New York City Metropolitan Transportation Authority. I also founded a project at the City University of New York titled, it's an organization that dealt with community environmental projects. that I coordinated. And then before that, I was a PhD candidate at the University of California at Berkeley. So I actually was in a PhD program. I completed all of my requirements for a PhD except the formal dissertation because my ex-wife got a brain aneurysm when I was writing my dissertation. And at that time, we had two little babies. Her mother had just recently retired from as a factory worker.
Oh,
her sister was still in high school. So I basically had to...
You just had to stop, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to stop my PhD and take two full-time jobs. And the program that I was at Berkeley, they only admitted six PhD students per year. So it was extremely competitive. You know, Berkeley has the most Nobel Prize winners in the world. So just to, you know, give you that background. And then, so... Maybe sort of let me introduce you a little bit in terms of how Free got started.
So if I can just interrupt there, you in a way you were on a par with these scientists, but in a way you were because of fate. It was fate that cheated you out of your scientific heritage, which you've rediscovered.
Correct. I would have been a tenured professor somewhere at a major university in the United States if it wasn't for fate.
Okay, now one quick question before we talk about Free, which we have to for the remainder of our conversation, because that's what we're here to do. My listeners will email me and say you didn't allow Ray to explain what the near-death experience that he had was. My mother had one when she was a child. My mother nearly died, as many children in that era did, of pneumonia. She came as close to death as it's possible to come, and she came back, and we lost her 10 years ago, last month, but she came back to us, and I wouldn't have been here, but she described as a child recovering from pneumonia, but having been to a place that was a place of sunshine, friendly people, beautiful greenery. Was that your experience?
Well, my experience was somewhat different. I think I stated it's a near-death related type of experience. And this is going to take a little while to explain. But first of all, my sympathies for your mom. I lost my father several months ago as well.
My condolences to you. I've lost both my parents, and we both know that you move on, you move forward, but you never forget, and it impacts you forever.
Correct. But in my case, it was like when my father passed away, I knew that he was going to a better place because he had that experience. Now, let me explain what happened to me with my near-death related type of experiences. As a little a background to this story, I was a total atheist before my initial experience, which happened in March of 2012. Also, having that academic background, I was a pure material rationalist, unless, you know, science was applied to it in hardcore science, the Newtonian type of science, not the, you know, the alternative quantum physics that we now that I now know about, but this as the established scientific principles to an experience, then it was hogwash. And then we had an experience inside our living room where there was a miraculous healing that occurred. We were going to be euthanizing our Jack Russell Terrier that was 16 years old because she was totally paralyzed. And I won't go into the extensive details, but basically this energy being appeared in our living room, seen by my wife and I, took away my wife. She disappeared right in front of me with the dog, knocked me out for 45 minutes. I went to sleep. And then when I woke up again, my wife reappeared right to the same exact spot that she had disappeared with the dog. And she started jumping up and down and celebrating, "The angels cured her, the angels cured her, the angels cured her." And our Jack Russell Terrier was no longer a paralyzed dog. She was like a teenager running around the whole house.
Isn't that called a miracle?
It's a miracle. Exactly. It's a miracle. And it came about as a result of this plasma being that my wife had been praying all night for some type of angelic intervention. Now, what she saw was not what I saw. What she saw before she was abducted or taken, whatever you want to call it, she saw like a little UFO ship inside our living room floating 4 feet off the ground. It was 2 feet wide by 3 feet height, like an upside down U, had two green lights in the middle. And she said that they were like little men inside it. Okay, these are my wife's words.
Now, quite often individuals have experiences, but for two people and a dog to be both part of the same experience like that is Well, it's either a total, complete, inexplicable miracle, or, as some of my listeners may claim, it's a complete fabrication.
Well, I mean, you can give us a lie detector test. We brought the dog back to our vet, and the vet said, you know, what happened? So the vet checked her out because she was taking diuretics. She was taking Viagra for her heart, and he checked her out, and she says she's completely healthy. Take her off all this medication. And he was asking us tons of questions, what happened? And we told him that we changed her diet, you know? And it wasn't until a year later that all of a sudden the last 2 months of her life, the last 2 weeks of her life, she just sank, you know, super fast, where she got to the point of being almost paralyzed. You know, it's like Cinderella, you know, comes 12 o'clock, all of a sudden it reverts back.
And but you were given, she was given, and you were given some extra time.
An extra year of being like a teenager. So at that point, we told our veterinarian, his name is Dr. Phil Cruz. Anybody can look him up in Miami, Florida, veterinarian Phil Cruz. He's on Bird Road, which is 40th Street and 57th Avenue. So if anybody doubts him, you know, look up his telephone number and say, Ray Hernandez, they had a Jack Russell Terrier. He and his wife told you about the miraculous healing that occurred. So that's open to the public. I'm telling everyone here, okay?
Well, you know, I want to believe that these things are possible for a whole variety of reasons that any human being would want to believe this. It's a beautiful story. That's the near-death experience, yeah?
No. Then what happened was that my wife began seeing large UFO crafts. And I won't go into the details because there was many of those types of experiences. So for 6 months, I didn't have any other type of experience. And then 6 months later, in August of 2012, I was waiting a friend outside, and I said, well, you know, I'd seen a video last night of this guy calling down a craft. And so while I'm waiting for my friend to give me some papers, I'm outside in my cul-de-sac, 9:30 at night, totally cloudy night. I said, what the hell? Let me try calling down a UFO too, you know. And I wasn't very serious about it, but then once I got into it, I became very serious. And then 15 minutes later, this huge, gigantic craft appeared. And then, again, I won't give you the details, but it instructed me to call my daughter. And I called my daughter. My daughter went outside. Then my friend comes with his wife and their 17-year-old daughter. Now, you had five people watching this gigantic UFO craft that was less than 10 meters away from us. And my daughter and I saw it for a total of 45 minutes. And then there was mind control that took place from that. Then I'm not going to give you the details. Let me jump into the NDE stuff.
Okay, but then you're saying that whatever creatures were inside that thing were somehow getting into your heads.
Oh, yes, undoubtedly. Yeah, correct.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. And if you talk to most experiencers, many of them would tell you, all of them will tell you, all the communications that takes place is telepathically, just like a near-death experience. In the near-death experience, the entities that they are communicating with is human-looking types of beings. The number one entity that we found in our research study is human-looking beings. From over 2,200 people that took our surveys. How communication is taking place among both NDEs and UFO contact? Telepathically. Mm. Okay. And there's numerous other similarities. But then what happened was that for the next 4 months, the very next day, I was guided to an NDE video. And all of a sudden, I was hooked. I ordered like 40 books from Amazon. And then when there was 5 books left, I ordered 40 more. 5 books left, 40 more, all on NDE. And then for the next 4 months, that's all I did. I didn't go to the internet. I didn't watch TV. I didn't have a social life with my family. All I did, 12 to 18 hours a day, was to read NDE books. And during this time period, I never mentioned to anyone that I was reading these NDE books. So I never talked to anyone. The only person was my wife, and she thought I was crazy. And then the very first person I ever mentioned NDEs to was my daughter's pediatrician. Dr. Herrera. And then she then told me about her own NDE. The very next day, this total stranger at church, I told him what happened with my daughter's pediatrician. And then he told me about his NDE that he had never mentioned to anyone before. Just like the doctor, the medical doctor had never mentioned to anyone else before. Then on Sunday, the very next day, and these were December 21st, December 22nd, December 23rd, 2012. Then I went to tell my father, because he was the biggest atheist in the world, and he was very, very sick. He was in bed. You know, he had every disease you could think of. And so I said, let me tell this to my father, because then I knew that these ETs were manipulating me to encourage these types of contacts with people. And so we got my father dressed. I went out there with my mother out into the patio. And then he goes on and tells me about his near-death experience. And he even had a life review. He told me up there, he said, time doesn't exist. I said, what do you mean time didn't exist? He said, I was up there 20 to 30 years. That's how long it took God to show me all the good things I had done with my life and all of the bad things. And then he just went into details, all the details.
Well, listen, there is a man that I had on this show very recently who you need to connect with in the UK, I think. His name is Anthony Wright. And Anthony Wright, by rights, should be dead now, because he nearly died five times. He had the most monumental brain tumour. Was effectively drugged and out of it for a whole month, can you believe? And during that time, he was as close to death a number of times as he possibly can be, but was involved in some kind of either inner dialogue with himself or dialogue with something else, where decisions were made about him coming back to existence. And this man somehow repaired 95% of his function. And I went to his home at Reading in Berkshire, UK, very recently and talked to him about this. He is a truly remarkable man. So I don't doubt that these things happen.
Well, let me add to that. There are numerous accounts of NDEs where these so-called miraculous healings have occurred. Dr. Eben Alexander had a miraculous healing. He should have died from the disease that he had. There's another famous individual, Anita Morjani. She had an NDE where she was basically had hours to live, and she fully recuperated. In her NDE, she was told, look, you're totally cured now of your cancer. There's no need to do all these additional tests, all these other chemotherapy and all these other things. You know, you're cured. And she went back and told the doctors. And fortunately for her, the doctors did do a series of batteries of tests on her, and they discovered that all of her cancer was completely gone.
What about you, Ray? What about your own NDE, though? Did you have a medical problem that took you to that position?
No. The weirdness about what happened to me was that after I had this close contact experiences with my close friends, and again, this is 10 meters away from us, was this huge football Wembley Stadium-sized craft, okay? Wembley Stadium-sized craft. Mm-hmm. And then it was immediately after that that I got into this NDE thing, reading all these books, but I had no life. I didn't do anything else. You know, it was for 4 months straight. That's all I did. I read several hundred of these NDE books. And then 3 days in a row, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I hit the lottery. What are the statistical probabilities that the very first three people ever mentioned NDEs to? All of them had an NDE. The last one being your own father. You know, it's like one in a billion, okay? Mm. And so I think the reason for that was that this was to crash me out of my atheist shell. Now I know for a fact that we are eternal spiritual beings.
And something somewhere wanted to put this right in front of your face and make sure you did not forget.
Correct. And many experiencers have had these types of experiences. Right. And and also, one thing if I could point up, there was a book written over 20 years ago by Preston Dennett. It was titled UFO Healings. Okay, that details over 200 UFO healings by entities. So people have either seen a UFO either before or after, and then a healing occurred, a miraculous healing. We have a very close friend of our organization. He is a reverend. He got a master's in divinity from New York Theological Seminary. He has his own church. He has had encounters with ETs, and one time he had a miraculous healing by this tall human being. He had just been released from a hospital. He had a blood clot. One leg was twice the size as the other. And he was in pain, still a lot of pain, even though he had been released from the hospital. He was praying. And then all of a sudden, this big, tall human being, like 7 feet tall, came to him, touched him, knocked him out. And then when he woke up half an hour later, his leg was the same size as the other. He had no pain. He said he could have run a marathon. Okay.
And you're absolutely sure in yourself, because we know that our own human mind has capacities that we don't understand properly. We can do things. So you're sure that this is something external.
This is in 30 seconds that this occurred. Also, look up on the internet, Anita Morjani, M-O-R, I believe it's J-A-N-I. She's very, very well known in the near-death experience field. And just play one of her videos, and she will talk to you about all the medical records that she actually has before her NDE and after her NDE, which shows that a miraculous healing occurred. So, and then Preston Dennett's book, it's titled UFO Healings.
So all of this in a way that I think a lot of people are not aware. They may be aware of NDE research. All of this, you believe, is connected somehow with extraterrestrial presences or powers.
Okay, not only myself, but also Dr. Edgar Mitchell and Rudy Shields. They were the first one to point this out. They said that there are various contact modalities, which are mechanisms or methods where humans are piercing the veil and having contact with non-human intelligence through UFO-related contact, through near-death experiences, through out-of-body experiences, through remote viewing. For example, are you aware that all of the major remote viewers around the world have had ET contact? I don't know if you knew that, okay?
Well, I know that some of them have tried to connect through remote viewing with ET and have tried to connect with entities in some cases like Jesus and Satan and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm talking very different. I'm talking about the mainstream remote viewers, the people that were trained at the Stanford Research Institute, Courtney Brown, who's a professor at Emory University.
I know Courtney very well. We've never talked about that. We must.
Okay, yeah, correct. Bring it up with all these people that ever talk about remote viewers. It's a subject that is out there that they talk among themselves, and some other folks know about it, and some of them have written in their books.
Well, certainly Courtney's talked to me about his remote viewing team at the Farsight Institute making connections or seeing things that they don't quite understand that are entities of some kind. The ET thing, I had no idea about. That's fascinating.
Also, people that take ayahuasca, 50% of the, there's this book, Dr. Rick Strassman, who was a professor at the University of Arizona. He did, I think it was the first, world's first academic study on DMT, the chemical.
And
we
have to say, because of all of the restrictions here, and I try and do this like a radio show, that is highly illegal in the United Kingdom, and we cannot advocate it in any way. But it's interesting to hear what you say about people who've academically researched that.
Correct. He got a license from the U.S. federal government to undertake academic studies on DMT. And the result was that 50% of those individuals had what can be described as ET contact experiences. Okay. People doing mystical meditation. If you talk to numerous mystical meditators, I'm sure that you will find the majority of them that have had contact experiences.
So why, I mean, I'm only asking you to speculate
channeling, for example, Howard, is another example.
Well, I've met quite a few channelers as well, not only in this country, but places like South Africa. Why is it then that I'm a sincere researcher, although my background is broadcasting and news, hard news, that's me. Yeah. I've chivied and begged and prayed and implored something to get in touch with me, come into my life, guide me, assist me, and nothing appears to me, even though I want it. Why is that then?
You're not the only one, Howard, and I don't have an answer for that. But what I can tell you is what these two geniuses have told me and have written down. they view reality as a quantum hologram, that we live in a multidimensional reality. If you could think of it as like a bubble within another bubble within another bubble within another bubble, and that and just within our own reality of our own universe, you literally have billions and billions or trillions of galaxies. And within our own galaxy, you have billions and billions of solar systems. And then within each of these solar systems, there are planets. And many, many years ago, this scientist, this astronomer did something called the Drake's Equation, which is now totally outdated because it's so much more larger than what he calculated. But it's basically was a calculation of what might be the probabilities of finding life out there in our universe. So it's not only is it exponentially expanded from this early study in the 1960s of the Drake's equation. And there have been new revised versions of the Drake's equations. We also have the concept of the multiverse. Most string theorists, which is now prevalent throughout theoretical physicists, believe that we might have up to 12 dimensions, 12 universes, to put in layman's term. Edgar and Rudy are not string theorists. They have a totally radical version of our the physics of our reality, and that's the quantum hologram. So to them, the way they had viewed it was that you have these multiverse of universes of spirit worlds, we might be able to call it, and within each of these spirit worlds, you're going to have conscious sentient beings. Okay, and some of them have the ability. You have to think, the Big Bang, which a lot of astronomers have now discredited, are beginning to discredit it. Those calculations are that our universe is 13.8 billion years old. Okay, so let's take, for example, that there's this one, let's say, race, for example, of these entities that's not a billion years old, but let's say a million years old. Okay, look at where humans have gone over the last 150 years. We went from covered wagons going out west with cowboys and Indians, okay, all the way to going to Mars now. Okay, that's 150 years. So imagine if there's a race that's a million years ahead of us. Imagine their technology. Okay, if you can work with the hypothesis that we do live in a multidimensional reality, why can't there be these entities that could actually cross over, let's say through a wormhole?
Well, it's interesting. If you then have to start thinking about everything as like a Russian doll, don't you? That we are the little doll in the very middle, but there are far exactly. bigger dolls over and above us.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. You and I as laymen, we have a very difficult time to try to understand the concept that time is irrelevant. That time doesn't exist. You know, there's no past, present, and future, right? That's heavy-duty concept. Also, all of these theoretical physicists, now almost all of them now accept that we live in more than one universe. I mean, how crazy is that? Okay, so what we need to be able to do is to get these concepts that these theoretical physicists are working at, and they are accepting, down to the reality of the paranormal, of the UFO, all this type of nature of reality, because then people are not going to then label you crazy. Okay, because to label us crazy, they have to label Michio Kaku, Stephen Hawking, Dr. Rudy Shields, and all these other people as crazies, because their concepts are just as crazy as the experiences that we are having here on Earth.
So this is the position that you have been put in. You're prepared through the experiences that you've had and the people around you to do something and become involved in something. So how did you connect with Edgar Mitchell?
Well, again, this is another one of these quote-unquote crazy type of experiences. This was in May of 2013. Previous to that date, about 6 months earlier, I had sent about 10 emails to very well-known names throughout the U.S. primarily. I had sent it to Grant Cameron. I had sent it to Whitley Strieber. I had sent it to Mary Rodwell, to Stan Friedman, you know, those big names that deal with, you know, UFOs and ETs and things of that sort, because I had no one to talk to. Howard, you know, when you're in a situation that you tell your friends and they'll think you're crazy, they'll scorn you, ridicule you, or they'll just change the subject.
So you were looking for a kindred spirit.
I'm looking for someone to talk to, because you go to the internet and it's filled with garbage, okay?
And in the meantime, you're doing your very important tax attorney work.
I'm trying to go back to my real world, Howard, okay, which is extremely difficult, okay, because it's like you're totally dismissive of your real world, because you're like, well, holy cow, you know, the real world is BS, you know, there's something more out there that I need to explore. So these are the things, really, it's an emotional trauma. Even though my experiences have always been positive, psychologically, you're dealing with trauma of getting hit over the head by an ET 2x4, which totally rocks your sense of who you are.
So you sent out all these emails to these important people.
I sent out all these emails.
You didn't get a whole lot of replies, but I'm presuming that you got one from Edgar Mitchell.
No. I got two or three replies, but let me continue with the story. Then I'm driving into work into downtown Miami. I work Flexi Place. I work mainly out of my home, and I drive into work one day a week. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of a traffic jam, and I get taken out of body. But not literally where you're seeing yourself underneath like an out-of-body experience. Automatically, I was in some type of, it's difficult to describe in terms, but it's like some type of a matrix reality where there's nothingness around you, nothingness. It's just your pure consciousness, your pure mind, okay? Then all of a sudden, materializes all around me was this big, gigantic wheel, okay, with spokes. Like a cartwheel, you know, those carriages, those the Wild West, that type of thing, you know. So I'm inside this gigantic, the fulcrum of this cartwheel that's spinning all around me. And all of a sudden, each side, each of these different spokes of a wheel is a different contact modality. Near-death experiences, UFO-related contact, remote viewing, channeling, shamanic journeys, mystical meditation, lucid dreaming, you know, et cetera, all the different ways where mechanisms where people are piercing the veil and having contact experiences. Then I instantaneously knew, because it wasn't a voice or anything, it's just I knew that they were all interrelated. That humans are studying these things separately as individually, but in actuality, it should be looked upon as one and should be studied together. Then I knew again automatically that what was holding it all together was consciousness, some type of advanced physics that we don't know yet. Okay. But, and then after that, I heard not a voice, but information inside my consciousness that I need to inform humanity of the relationship between them, they didn't say ETs, but the relationship between them, the spirit world, and consciousness. That I'm going to be needing help, and that there's two criteria for the help. This is not about making money, you know, personally, you know, personal gain. And you have to get people with minimal ego. And then poof, I was back in my car. Okay, then I called the only experiencer that I had been communicating with, this lady called Christina, at 8:30 in the morning, and I told her, I was hysterical, and I told her, you just won't believe what the hell just happened, and she told me, pull over if I need to and catch my breath, and I said, I can't even pull over in the middle of a traffic jam, and so anyway, when I got home late that afternoon, I got an email from Mary Rodwell. She said, dear Ray, first of all, I'm apologizing for responding to an email that you had sent 6 months earlier, but it just popped up on my computer.
Wow.
Okay. So then I then sent her an email. I said, well, you ain't seen nothing yet. This is what's happened in these 6 months since I sent you that email. And this is what happened today. So we eventually got on Skype and we had like a 2-hour call. And she was telling me tons of information. And we agreed to continue talking. The very next day at 9:30 in the morning, I get a phone call. Hello, is this Ray Hernandez? Yes. Oh, this is Dr. Rudy Shields. Who? I didn't even know who the guy was. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Mary had told you. I'm Dr. Rudy Shields. I'm an emeritus professor at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. And I was a very dear friend of Dr. John Mack for many, many years. And also Mary. And she sent me an email and she gave me your email and your telephone number. And she told me about that experience that you had regarding the wheel.
So you go from a situation where you think you're going nuts having all of these experiences. You don't know where to turn, who to talk to. And then suddenly you're put right in the epicenter of everything, connecting exactly. with the right people.
Exactly. And I don't connect with them. They connect with me. Okay. Now, Rudy then tells me that experience that I had was 100% correct. That he didn't call them contact modalities. He called them modern miracles. Okay. And he said that all of these modern miracles are indeed being studied separately, and they shouldn't, because it's all one component of the quantum hologram. Then he goes on and starts detailing Edgar Mitchell's quantum hologram theory and also his theory as well, because he's doing an extension of it. And then he then begins to spoon feed me quantum physics. And that telephone call lasted for 90 minutes. Okay. Mm. And at the end of it all, he says, Ray, I think you need to form an organization to implement what these ETs gave you. And I told him, I said, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing, you know? And so he said, look, write down this telephone number. And I wrote down the telephone number. And I said, whose telephone is this? And he says, that's the telephone number of my mentor. So I said, well, who's your mentor? And he goes, Dr. Edgar Mitchell. So we agreed to continue our conversation. Now, I already knew who Dr. Edgar Mitchell was, and I was, you know, scared of calling him, you know, quite naturally. And it took about 2 or 3 hours later that I managed to work up the courage to give Edgar a call. So by the time I called him in the afternoon, that same day that Rudy called me, Edgar said that he had been waiting for my phone call, that he and Rudy not only had he had gotten his email, but they had discussed extensively my contact experience, and that Rudy said that I was someone very important that I needed to talk to. So I want to invite you to my home.
How did they know that you weren't a fantasist?
I don't know. I mean, Rudy, I spoke with him for 90 minutes. I spoke with him for 90 minutes. Now, remember, Rudy worked with Dr. John Mack. Are you aware of Dr. John Mack?
Yes.
Of his work? Okay. He was the first person to introduce Dr. Mack on the topic of consciousness, of the multidimensional nature of our reality, that our reality is not what it truly is perceived to be, okay? So he was like Dr. John Mack's mentor in that arena. And then Rudy got very involved with experiencers. He wound up talking to numerous of these experiencers that Dr. John Mack had been working with, and then was part of Dr. Mack's inner core group of academics that was supporting Dr. John Mack. And then after Dr. John Mack died, he became one of the coordinators of the John Mack Institute. So Rudy, he was very, very familiar with experiencers. And so so here I was. Edgar invited me to his house the very next day at 10 o'clock in the morning sharp. He goes, 10 o'clock sharp, okay? So I was there at 10 at his door, you know? And there I spent the whole day with Edgar. And that's when he told me tons of intimate stuff, like we had initially had discussed, including he showed me pictures of his pony. That was his pony when he was a little kid. He was on top of the pony with a cowboy outfit. He even showed me his baby clothes when he was an infant, you know, that was on the wall. I took a picture of it. He showed me all the paintings that other astronauts had done that had given to him as a gift, these original paintings. And on and on and on. He told me about the cosmonauts, what happened with the astronauts, that he was part of a test flight group as part of the U.S. Navy, that they told him, now you have to go to MIT, you know. He originally didn't want to go to MIT to get his PhD, but said, you will be going there. And not only was he getting a PhD in aeronautical engineering and physics, he also was there supervising the engineers at MIT that were working with the team that was building the lunar module. So when that problem with on Apollo 13 occurred, Edgar said that three of those people that were in that movie was him. Okay, because he knew more about the lunar module than almost anybody else.
No, he and I talked when we did the interview together 5 years ago about that whole situation, that whole process.
Yeah. So Edgar was there telling me basically his whole life history from the very beginning to the end. And then he told me, you know, I won't go into some of those details, you know, some of the ET and UFO stuff, you know, but he did tell me.
He did tell you then about his own contact.
What he told me was his own personal experience, his own shamanic experience that he had up there in space. He told me that almost all the astronauts had that type of experience, except they don't talk about it. He told me about that, not only all the cosmonauts, but most of the astronauts have had paranormal related type of experiences in space that they don't publicly talk about. But he did not give me the details.
So that was must have been revelatory for you.
Oh, no, it was blowing me away because I didn't even know this guy. I didn't even met him before, never talked to him, you know. And he was out there like spilling his guts to me. And towards the end of it, he goes, Ray, Rudy and I had already discussed it. Okay. We will be joining you and encourage you to form an organization to implement what your ETs told you. And he specifically said your ETs. Okay. And you could take that however you want it, okay? And then, and I told him about Edgar, I have no idea. They didn't give me any specific language. And he says, don't worry, it'll come to you. It always does.
Now, there will be people who will be saying, how do we know this really happened? Is any of this documented anywhere? Well, did he write anything down for you?
You could interview Mary Rodwell, and she could tell you exactly what I'm telling you is the truth. You could interview Rudy Shields, and he could tell you exactly that's what took place. As a matter of fact, I gave a lecture at a conference outside of Boston last year, and Rudy was in attendance. And I stopped my lecture right in the middle, and I said, Rudy, what I'm telling you about, you know, the issue with Mary Rodwell, that me being inside that wheel, and then you giving me a call at 9:30 in the morning, and then Edgar calling me that afternoon, and you speaking with Edgar, is all of that true that I'm telling you? And he stood up and said to the audience, yes, 100% true.
Wow. Okay, so we have the verification there.
Yeah.
So if effectively Edgar Mitchell
interview Rudy or interview Mary and they'll tell you that.
Edgar, okay, obviously, so Edgar Mitchell himself deputed you to help set up this organization Free.
Well, he said that he and Rudy will be the scientific advisors. That's how all of this started, because we really didn't have an organization. He was saying, look, Rudy and I will be your scientific advisors. So that afternoon when I got, late that afternoon when I got home from Edgar's house, I then sent an email to Mary. I said, we need to Skype. And so during the Skype call, I said, Mary, you know, these two gentlemen encouraged me to form this organization. I said, would you like to join us? So the four of us can become the co-founders. And she accepted it. And that's how the organization started. But we didn't have a name, and we had no mission. We had no idea what this organization is going to be doing. But that's how it started.
Right. And the project that you're involved in now with Free is a very important project, because it's collating research that involves, I think, more experiences than have ever been contacted before, and refining that research. Talk to me about that.
Sure, sure. First of all, let me just give you a little bit of a background about our organization. First of all, we're not a UFO organization. We don't go out and investigate lights in the skies, you know, people that have seen UFOs, or even people that have seen ET contact them. You know, we don't are not the ground investigators, okay? Our approach in Free is, and also we're not just focusing on UFO-related contact. The approach in Free is the approach of the quantum hologram theory. That is that all of these diverse modalities of contact are interrelated, like I said before, that they need to be studied together under one category instead of separately. And our focus on is the best approach of doing this is not to go out there and interview people. Oh, I saw a little light in the sky. The UFO turned to the left, turned to the right. It changed to a blue color, then it changed to a red color. No, we've been doing that for 70 years or so, there's no result finding that's come out of that approach.
So is there another way?
The approach that we're taking is we are focusing on the actual experiencers, the actually people that have had contact experiences with non-human intelligence as a result of a UFO sighting. And that is our Free Experiencer research study. Later on, what we want to be able to do, and this is a multi-year study, later on what we want to be able to do is to compare that with people that have had, for example, near-death experiences. Earlier, I gave you a couple of the commonalities between both types of experiences. We've counted at least 20 different commonalities between both types of experiences. And then we want to be able to compare that with, you know, people that have had mystical meditations, people that have had shamanic journeys, you know, the channeling folks, et cetera, but deal with it from their direct experiencer level.
So this has the potential to be the most remarkable research, because if you find these things have synergies between them, then you've just come up with the beginnings of an explanation for everything.
Correct, correct. And that's why we have various physicists, PhD physicists associated with Free as well, who are not public, okay, but they are working with us. And it was Edgar and Rudy that brought most of them to the table. So these are people that already know the theoretical constructs for this approach, but because society at large, you know, labels you and taints you, a lot of these people have not come out of the closet. We do have 5 retired academic professors in Free that are part of our board of directors. But again, these are all people that are have come out of the closet after they have retired. Mm.
So how do you find this big survey research that you're doing at the moment? How do you find the experiences, and how do you know that they're not people faking it?
Okay, let me go over the methodology for this and what we're doing. First of all, when I had my experience and myself having this my academic background, after I realized that what's on the internet is BS, you know, it's garbage, okay? I then tried to do what is called an academic literature review. And that is what has been written academically about this phenomenon of UFO-related contact. And what I found was that there was almost nothing written about it academically, scientifically. What you had was 1,001 people writing stories of their own experiences. Or you had David Jacobs or Bud Hopkins writing about the selective people that selectively walk through their doors. You know, that's not scientific research, okay? And so we decided to do the world's first academic study of people that have had UFO-related contact experiences with non-human intelligence. Now, let me go over just some of the methodology. First of all, most of the previous studies that have been done on this were done by a one-person team. The last study was done by Kathy Martin, who is not an academic. She's the lead researcher for MUFON's Experiencer Research Project. She only utilized 50 individuals for her research study. She had about 50 questions. And then the people were not selected anonymously. These were people that were advertising, let's say, in the MUFON Journal or an organization, KUFOS, or calls were made to other researchers. Do you have anyone that's had UFO-related contact experience or an abduction? Would they like to take a study? So these were already self-selective, who they picked. Secondly, the focus was on abductions. And most of the board members, all the board members in our organization, knew that abductions was only one component of the ET contact phenomenon. And again, I'm using the term ET not to signify extraterrestrial, but we don't even know where they're from. They could be from another dimension. Who knows where the hell they're from? So we appropriately use the term non-human intelligence, but for abbreviation, I throw out the word ET so people know what I'm talking about. So our focus on was not just people have had abduction experiences, but anyone that's had any type of UFO-related contact experience. And by the way, as a side note, what we found out in our study, that only 1/3 of over the 2,200 people that took our surveys, 1/3 are categorized as people that have had abduction type of experiences. All the other people have had UFO-related contact, but not abductions. Okay. Now, backtrack. Also, the approach that we took was that all of these other studies included hypnotic regression. So you could have someone that's you're interviewing them for one of these surveys that have been done in the past, and they could be telling you 1,001 stories that resulted from hypnotic regression, information that many of them might not have recalled through conscious explicit memory. They might have been, let's say, in Jacob's little living room, and then all of a sudden these memories pop into their head. And now they're relaying to you this information as if it really did occur. So on purpose, for methodological reasons, we decided not to include only memories from conscious explicit memory, not from channeling, not from hypnotic regression, not through lucid dreaming, et cetera, et cetera. Secondly, most of these studies only had a small number of questions. We, in our study, so far, we have almost 700 questions, okay? Also, the most important criteria is how we circulated this information. We circulated this information through over 2,000 emails, not only to other experiencers, but if you have written a book on any topic of UFOs or ET contact, we sent you an email letting you know to be informed that we're taking this. We also posted it on over 500 Facebook sites.
So you were trying to make sure that you screened out people who might try and dupe or hoax you?
Well, I haven't answered that question yet. I'm just into the methodology of how we widely circulated this. We sent it to over 500 different Facebook organizations, and not just UFOs, but we also sent it to people doing CE5, people that do Reiki healing, people that do mystical meditation, people that do remote viewing, you know, all of the different contact modalities. We sent it to all of those people, as well as the ufology organizations, the people that are ET or organizations, so a wide range, energy healers, new age groups, etc. So, and every month we would send out the posting to take our survey. Now, what we found out was that we've out of 2,200 people, a good many of them, over 2,000, have seen UFOs. Okay, now a good many of them as well have had downloads of information, but the people that have actually seen an entity was close to 1,500 people.
Mm. And, so, and of course, we have to put in the words here to all of this. They say they've had downloads.
Correct. Mm. Now here is the one of the ways of trying to screen people from take the survey. First of all, the survey one, you can do it within a half an hour. Survey two is going to take you at least 3 or 4 hours to do. Okay. Survey three is taking people weeks to do, because survey three is written responses to 70 open-ended questions. People have been complaining, Ray, this is impossible. Okay, just with the first three questions, I've already written like 20 pages.
So you're saying that only the genuine would have the will, the determination to put themselves through that?
To go to up to phase three, correct. And then phase four is the actual formal interview, one-on-one interview, which is going to be a multi-day interview. Okay, so if you're looking to hoax us, okay, you're putting in hundreds of hours of your time to try to hoax us.
So,
okay.
You can't interview everybody. Are you picking a sample of those people?
Correct. We're going to be meeting in 2 weeks to make those determinations, whether it's the top 200 cases, the top 300 cases, but certainly we have at least 300 cases, which are major cases, cases that have had numerous witnesses in their UFO sightings. A good many of their family members have had these ET contact experiences, not only their wife, but children.
You're going to be talking for the first time. You're going to be talking to the absolute cream of the crop here. Can I ask you a favor?
Correct.
Since this process you say is only going to begin in weeks from now, is there any way that I have a worldwide audience and I also do a radio show? Is there any way that I can connect with you and maybe some of these people once you start the process?
Sure. First of all, the answer is yes, but let me put a quotation mark to all of this. Our study is completely anonymous. Okay, we don't ask for your name, your mailing address, your identification number, your telephone number, none of those things. So it's completely anonymous. When we do the interview, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about the methodology for phase four, which is the interview, not to begin the interviews. The interviews won't begin until sometime in the summer. Okay, now the people that are doing the interviews are not going to know the names of the participants. They'll just have participant number 386,
right,
for example.
So that okay. will remove the possibility that they might have heard about their particular case.
Correct. Or even know who these people are. Mm. And then they will get a printout of all of their responses for these individuals. Also, the people that's being interviewed, they won't know who the interviewer is. They'll just have interviewer number 28.
So you're trying to build in as many safeguards, checks, and balances as you can. At the end of it, because our time is limited on this conversation, we have to do this again, though, Ray, because I think we've only scratched the surface. What do you want to come out with?
Well, we already have our preliminary research data, and maybe we, in the end, we could talk about that, because we spent a lot of time talking about my personal information. But
well, all right, then I'll tell you what we'll do then. For the first time on The Unexplained, and I'll decide this right now, we're going to do this in two parts, if that's okay with you. Have you got the time?
Mm-hmm.
Have you got the time to go on beyond here?
Yes, I do, Howard. Yes,
all right. So this has been part one of our conversation with Ray Hernandez. You've been listening to The Unexplained. Thank you very much for all of your emails. Please keep in touch. You know how to do that. Go to the website, theunexplained.tv. And until we meet on part two of our conversation with Ray Hernandez, please take care, stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. Thanks very much. Stand by for part two. Bye-bye.